Hello and welcome to Off the Roll. I'm your host, Troy Hirschman. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. We got a great one coming up for this second episode of season two of Off the Roll. We're going to be talking to Steve Lubehusen. Steve is currently the Health and Physical Education Department Chair at Carroll High School, as well as their one of their certified athlete trainers. He's been there for 30 years at the same school and has seen it kind of grow up from a small country school to a now a 6A football school north of Fort Wayne. Steve's story is really good, and he really does a great job of explaining kind of his dual role as a teacher, athletic trainer, and really has been a good example of how that works. And then working for two different companies, how he balances that out a little bit too. He also has a pretty strong student athletic trainer program, or I guess should say a student aid program, and has really helped the profession in the aspect of bringing athletic trainers to the profession by training them to do a few things at the high school level. He's one of our more current Cardinal Sports Medicine Society Ring of Honor members as well. And so let's get to meeting Steve Lubehusen. Welcome to Off the Roll. I'm your host, Troy Hirschman. Today we're with Steve Lubehusen. And if you want the official title on Steve, I'm going to read it right off his LinkedIn account. It is the Health and Physical Education Department Chair at Carroll High School. He is an athletic trainer for Carroll High School and Optimum Performance. Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
How are you doing, Troy?
Good to see you today. Great to see you. Yeah. You're taking your lunch break and doing this with us, so I appreciate that. So
yeah, no problem. I've got a fifth period prep, and so I've got like about 90 minutes here we can talk. And
that's awesome. Well, I'm sure we'll use every last minute of it. Yeah. So, so I'm going to ask you, where are you originally from, Steve?
I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I went to Southside High School, which is a public school in Fort Wayne. It was a large high school when I was growing up, and we've been growing lots of different high schools in Fort Wayne since then, but yeah. I'm at a different high school now. So
what did you do in high school? What was your high school life like in that capacity?
I was a typical student. I loved being social and hanging out with other people, but sports wise, I played baseball for my first 2 years.
Okay.
And I grew up playing baseball. I love baseball. Still do. Doing something around there, covering baseball especially. I did baseball for my first 2 years, and then I got stubborn-headed, and I thought I knew more than the head coach did because he wanted me to play JV and varsity, dress back and forth and cover both of those just because I didn't have a starting varsity spot, and I got stubborn and said, no, I don't want to do that. So I had a good friend of mine that I played golf with all the time. And he's like, well, come out for the golf team because you could definitely make the varsity on golf. And so I did that my last 2 years of high school. Regretted quitting baseball, but I had a blast playing golf for my last 2 years in high school.
So did you have an athletic trainer at Southside when you were going to high school?
No, that's a good question because we did not have an athletic trainer going through school like I did in the mid 80s. And so I had no idea what athletic training was. And so I'm very fortunate and feel fortunate that I fell into it.
Yeah.
At Ball State.
Yeah. So that's the thing. You decided to go to Ball State. Were you looking to go anyplace else?
Really, Ball State's the only place I applied. And the only reason I applied at Ball State was because of the location. It was only about an hour and 15 minutes south of Fort Wayne, and the size of Ball State. I had some friends who went to Purdue, some friends went to IU, some friends stayed in town at IPFW then, it was called, and different places. But Ball State was a good size. We only had about 19,000 students at that time. And I was still an undecided major, and so I didn't have to go to a certain college. I just knew it was going to be public. My parents really pushed me to do education or to do a postgrad or college, you know, to do something professional. And I respected that. And I just didn't know what it was going to be.
Right.
I came to Ball State as an undecided major.
So what did your parents do?
My dad, they were both in education, actually.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to think about. That's where I've ended up for the last 30 years. But my dad is a teacher. He taught all the shop and shop classes, the, you know, we used to call them back shop back then, woods and metals and drafting and architectural drawing and all those classes. And my mom worked in the school as an aide, working in the attendance office or the library or other places like that. So, I mean, education was always important with us. And they forced it upon my brother and my sister and I. I'm the oldest of three. And all three of us went off to college and became professionals.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you get to Ball State. Where were you living at when you got to Ball State?
I lived in Hearst. Is it Hearst? In La Follette.
Yeah. No Mitch longer Hearst. There.
Yeah, no longer there. I've seen it. I've seen it be destroyed, and it's turned into something brand new and more beautiful. But I lived in Hearst, second floor, on the wellness hall, because they had a wellness dorm that was non-smoking, non-drinking.
Oh, you know? Wow. Okay.
But it was anything but that with several of the students on that floor. I'm not going to incriminate anybody, but we had, you know, it was like the L hallways, you know, the angles of La Follette. In one hall, we had the nicest, cleanest hall for the semester. And the other hall was the dirtiest, nastiest, grungiest. And they got, that was their side of the hall. And they got fined and had to pay all kinds of expensive fees once the semester or once the school year ended, because my dad picked me up. I remember in May, he picked me up at the end of the school or when we were on quarters actually at that time. So I think it was the end of May. He picked me up and he got like a $300 bill from the dorm and from the residence hall. And he's like, "What is this?" I'm like, "I don't know, because that shouldn't be us. We had the cleanest hall of the, on the thing." And that was the other one. They had to replace the carpet. The guys had burned it. They'd puked on it so many times, probably other types of body fluids on it and other things. And so we argued and complained, and they said, "Okay, well, you live on the good side of the hallway. You don't live on the bad side, so you don't have to pay the $300. So,
yeah. Wow. They were still trying to pump money out of you no matter what.
But... Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely. And residence hall back then was a good price. It was only $250 a month for that. And so I lived there for 1 year, and then a bunch of us on that floor, on the clean side, we all moved off campus and got two apartments over in Winsong. Which is right over there by Muncie North.
Yeah.
And so we lived there for 2 years, my sophomore and junior year, lived there. And then the next 2 years, I was there for a total of 6 years because I was so undecided. I'll get into that, but that made for extra good times at Ball State also. But then the next 2 years, I lived in married housing with a roommate of mine, because they opened them up to just regular students. They didn't have enough married housing on campus, and they wanted to fill them. So they're like, "Hey, anybody who lives here or anybody that needs a two-bedroom apartment, two-story," it was like a nice little flat or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had a kitchen and everything else. We lived there for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then my last year, the sixth year, I lived in a crazy house down in the village, and with a couple swimmers. That was fun.
You know, the thing is that we all got a little familiar with Scheidler during COVID, because that was the quarantine dorm when they had to get quarantined, and the story that came that swimming was an issue during COVID. And when they were quarantining for those days, I guess they were all supposed to be inside, and one of the graduate assistants for swimming went over there, and they're like, "It's party time. They're outside. Yeah. They're not social distancing." Yeah. They were, you know, and again, we only knew what we knew back then, and it was fine. But, but I mean, it was like, "Hey, we don't have to go to class and we're bored." So I'm surprised there wasn't any swimming babies that came out of that whole deal, but they didn't. So
talk about knowing what you knew and that stuff. I'm just thankful that I did not go to college when we had social media and cell phone cameras in your pocket, and nobody owned a video camera or anything else like that.
Oh no, it was bad enough. There was an occasional camera at a party sometimes.
Yeah.
And those pictures were developed, hopefully long destroyed by now, but, those would have,
that could have been dangerous.
It was going to be completely dangerous. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So undecided for a while.
Yeah, quite a while, actually.
What were you dabbling in before you kind of fell into athletic training? Where were you dabbling in?
Good question. I was undecided the first year, and so I just took all my general regular classes, you know, the prereqs and just the general education classes. I thought I wanted to do I took a couple history classes. And I always loved history when I was in high school.
Yeah.
So I took a couple history classes. I did really well in those. Down on the quad, the old, I don't know if it was Burkhart building.
Burkhart, it is Burkhart,
yeah. I took a couple history classes, and so I thought, I had a friend of ours, friend of the family, that my dad was in education, my mom was in education, and so I ran into the principal at their high school that they worked at, Northrop High School, and he asked me, you know, at the state cross-country meet, I went to go watch my sister run, and he asked me, what are you going to major in? And I'm like, well, I'm thinking about social studies, education. I think I want to be a teacher and get into education. And social studies, and he told me, he's like, don't do it. Don't do it. You won't get a job. We are oversaturated. There's no way you'll get a job. We have way too many social studies teachers and coaches, and you'll struggle finding a job. So I'm like, okay, great. I just floundered for a year, year and a half, trying to figure out what I was going to major in. And now I just get told not to do that.
Right.
So then, you know, I did 2 years pretty much undecided. And then I think it was fall of my third year. Would have been my junior year. I found exercise science.
So were you looking at your Dapper form going, I'm running out of spots to stuff to take.
Yeah, exactly. And my parents were pressing me the whole time. They're like, what are you majoring in? We're paying for your housing. You're paying for your education, your tuition. Yeah. We keep pumping $250 a month into you. You know, what are you going to show for it? And so I'm like, I don't know. But then I found, and I was just browsing through the catalog. You remember the course catalog they used to pick up? And I found something called exercise science. I'm like, hey, exercise. I like to exercise. I like to work out. I like sports. So I started taking a bunch of classes in that. And I was taking, you know, had Ball State made you take, I think, one PE class and one PE fitness class. I took like six or seven of them. I mean, each semester I had like, you know, instead of 15 hours, I'd have like 15 hours, but I'd have like seven or eight classes.
Yeah.
Because they were all 1 hour classes.
Classes.
I was taking tons of just fun PE classes. And I took volleyball. I took badminton. I took badminton twice because the professor for badminton, he's like, hey, you're pretty decent at this. You're having fun. And you can take my next semester class. And I'm like, well, I'm not a PE major. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll sign off on you. You know, I'll give you a special permission.
Was that Covell?
Say the name again.
Was it Jack Covell?
No, I don't think that was it. It's been too long. But but he played competitively badminton in tournaments and stuff. And he signed off and he said, don't worry, you don't have to do the lesson plans. You don't have to do make up quizzes or other stuff like that. He goes, You just show them how to do demonstrate pickleball, and then I'll give you a credit for the project.
Yeah.
And you won't have to do one, but you can just come play badminton every day, and I'll give you a grade. So it was fun. But then I found exercise science, and I took the foundation class, or one of the first classes in that, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do exercise science, you know, cardiac rehab or whatever else they were doing.
Right.
You know, there were lots of majors in exercise science.
Right.
It was a growing program at that time with a performance lab and everything like that. So, but then they said, you got to take some electives if you're going to major in exercise science. And one of the electives was PEP 396, prevention of care of athletic injuries.
Yeah.
And I remember it to this day. I took that class. I walked into Carmichael Hall over there, the round Carmichael Hall over by the duck pond. And Tony Cox was teaching this class. And I'm like, what is athletic training? I have no idea. And he introduced it to me and, you know, the other students in there. And I didn't know it, but it was 396. So this is an advanced course.
Yeah.
For athletic training, and all the other students in there had already had PEP 196 and nutrition and all these other things like that. And I'm like, 396 athletic training. I don't know what athletic trainers are. I learned what athletic training was and all the different avenues that you could work in and areas. And I'm like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Right.
And so a light bulb just went off and I'm like, I love sports. I love being around teams and athletes. And this sounds like it's right up my alley.
Yeah.
So
what was your biggest takeaway from a Tony Cox taught 396 class?
The biggest thing that impressed me at the time was that I could have a job and be around sports. And I could also and learn how to tape ankles. I'm like, ankle taping? Oh, that's new. I've never seen that before. I'd never sprained my ankles. I'd never seen anybody with a sprained ankle. We didn't have an athletic trainer when I was in high school. So that was all new. And so I got pretty decent at it, just, picked it up and, learned some skills doing it and other stuff. And I was like, this is fun. I like doing this. I want more of this.
Right.
So I talked to Tony. I'm like, hey, is this, learned all the different ways that you could be an athletic trainer in all the different areas. I'm like, I'm not good enough to play baseball at the next level, but I could get a job in athletic training and work my way up in baseball, professional baseball, because you could start in the minors and work your way up. And that was always in the back of my mind at first when I started doing athletic training is I'm going to go baseball. I'm going to go major league.
Right.
So.
No, that's, I think that when you have that light bulb, and it came on earlier for me than it did you, but you have that light bulb come on, and it is kind of what makes it cool is that, because how many people were in that 396 class?
There are probably, 25, at least 25, 30 students crammed into this little Carmichael Hall classroom in the basement there. And they're all juniors, as well, and into the program and other, had some exposure. They like some of your other, I've listened to some of your podcasts and everybody talks about the Kramer camps and other things like that. That would have been cool if I was exposed to one of those when I was younger. But
but it is, it isn't like you're in a lecture hall with 200 people you're in a business major and there's 100 kids in a lecture hall trying to do the same thing you're doing. The thing about that was always attractive to me about athletic training was not just the fact that you're working in this dynamic environment of sport and athletes and let's face it. Hey, you're telling me that I could just sit around and maybe tape a couple of ankles and I'm there in case there's something that happens. I get to get in for free and
watch
these games. I'm on board and there's only like a few of me that do this.
It was mind blowing.
There's nobody pushing me out of the way to go be a salesperson or even a coach for that matter. It was just kind of it was very exclusive and the fact that if I'm the only one, then everybody's coming to me, which again, it kind of plays to your ego a little bit maybe, but back then it was a niche and there wasn't a lot of people doing it. And there were people asking a lot of questions like, what do you do? You do what?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I've got this thing on my back that can you take a look at it type thing, which still happens,
I mean,
that was the thing that was always attractive to me was that there was nobody, especially in high school when I was doing it, there may have been one other kid, but he really was wanting to be more the basketball manager than he was wanting to be an athletic trainer, where I was all in on the athletic training stuff. And I think that's the thing that really, really got to me was that there was some cool stuff going on with this, but I was the only one. And there was something really unique and cool about that. So,
One of the first experiences I had is, I talked to Tony and I said, hey, I'm interested in this athletic training major and switching my major. Cause I switched right after that first semester of exercise science. I found what I wanted to do and I wanted to switch, but he's like, okay, well, you got to apply to get in. And I'm like, okay. And so I think it was too late to apply for that spring semester.
Right.
But I ended up, I can't remember if I took it in the spring or fall, but I remember, I think I took it in the spring. And then that fall, they knew that I was interested in the program and that I was going to apply. So they put me with fall baseball. That first touch that I had with right. collegiate sports and with athletic trainers other than Tony in the class was they put me with baseball in the fall. And I got to hang out with another student who was in the program, but also a GA, and his name was Darren. Darren, shoot, I'm drawing a blank. But he was a GA, and so he had gone through the program, gone through a program somewhere in the MAC, I believe it was. And he came. He was working with baseball.
Darren, I'm gonna remember this, but he's from Slippery Rock.
Oh yeah, yeah, Pennsylvania. That's right.
Yeah, he that's gonna help Slippery. Us, Darren. Yeah, Darren Powell. Darren Powell. Darren Powell.
There you go. Slippery Rock. Yep, Rock. I remember that.
Yeah.
And so watching him work and watching him take care of the athletes was really cool because I got to hang out there for several weeks and just go out there during baseball, and they were doing practice, and then they'd do a practice game, and another college would come in and they'd do a fall ball game.
Who was the student out there? Do you remember that?
I want to say his name was Rich. He was big and burly, Rich, curly
Rich
hair.
Rich Riles.
Yes. Rich Riles. And because he was already in the program.
Yeah.
And I was just a newbie. I was just a come in and watch and observe and try to pick up some stuff. And I remember playing with all the stuff in the athletic training kit and taping my fingers with different types of tape, each one of them, because there were like four or five different types of tape. And we were just watching practice and watching things happen.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. I mean, and you got to think too, and this is the other thing at that time at Ball State. It was a cast of characters that were in the program.
it was fun. And I met some of them because I had taken that 396 class and they were in that program already taking it and in that class. And, you know, it was interesting. It was fun. And so, I got to meet them in the fall.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. You said you were thinking about your class. I always ask this, dude, so you know this is coming. But who was in the program when, because it was probably the fall of what, 92 that you were?
Yeah, probably fall of, you know, 90.
Or 91.
91, I think it was. Spring of 91 and fall of 90, around there. There was the students that I remember that were above me. I can remember a few of those, like you were there and Dave Weichel.
Yeah.
And Chad, Dave and Chad both worked basketball.
Yeah, the Try Guys.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was a guy named Chris. He had a mustache and
Chris Robinson. Stocky.
Chris Robinson. Yep, that's it. I think there was Fran.
Oh, yeah.
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 Fran and Rich Riles.
Rich Riles.
Yeah. And then those are the ones that were, I think, in a couple years above me. And I've run into other people that, you know, that were in the program ahead of me, and I was just a rookie at the time, and I didn't know to look up and make contacts and remember names and other stuff like that. But I'll run into people at conventions and other stuff that, you know, at Ball State parties and find out what year they were in school and other things.
Yeah.
And then the ones that were, I think, in the program, because I got in that fall after baseball, I applied and got in my first, and then I started first of the year, that spring semester was when I started in the program and I got in. And the ones that were in the program with myself were Jeremy Hunt, Dr. Hunt, you know, Jeremy was, you know, an all-star while he was there and still is. And John Compton was in the program.
Yeah.
Took a lot of classes with John Compton and Dan Lukens, Greg Ingerman.
Yeah.
Can't remember if Greg and I were in the same class, but him and I, his kids graduated from the same school that I teach at now, and we're good friends. We see each other probably at least once a month.
Yeah.
Brian Steele, I think was his name.
Yeah. Brian Steele. Yep.
Rita Bolenbacher.
Rita Bolenbacher. There we go. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You know, you're at that point in time, there was a struggle, and we won't talk about the struggle of maintaining female student athlete trainers in the program. Yeah. There was a reason why, but we won't necessarily have to go there. But it's interesting that the amount of males that came through the program at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's some females I remember in the class above me and other things that I'd taken some classes with, but I just memory doesn't remember.
Yeah, Diane Talbot would be one. Neil and I have talked about this one. Chris Figger. Do you remember Chris?
I think so.
Very tall, black hair, married.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She kind of went off the deep end a little bit because of a certain staff member. And it was quite interesting there for a while. Yeah.
Jay Pearson. Jay Pearson was in the same place as I.
Jay, if he listens to the podcast, he's going to be happy that you remembered it. No.
Oh, Jay's a good friend, and I love running into him. Several conventions we've done that. And
yeah.
I have his business card and other contact information, stuff like that. So
there was a definite, and I've talked about this before, but with Rex and Neil and Tony and the the couple of GAs they brought in with Darren and then Sean was the second GA.
I worked with Sean. Yes.
Yeah.
Sean was great. And
there was definitely a very much a community that was amongst that there wasn't at that point in time. Not that we knew that the staff people were equals, but they were with us. We were in the trenches together in the clinical assignments and those relationships really fostered that feeling of family at that point in time between.
Right. And it definitely did feel like family. I agree with you with the GAs as well as with the staff and the different classes that were taught by staff members.
Yeah.
And other people, you definitely felt part of the family. Sometimes, it felt like two separate families on one side of the campus, on the other side of the campus.
Yeah.
But, it was definitely still, you got a lot of learning and a lot of support from both sides in different areas. And I thought I did well in both sides. I thought that my first assignment once I got in the program was with women's field hockey. And I did not know what that was either because, again, I'm a kid from the Midwest, had no idea what field hockey was. And then when I got it was in the spring semester. So it was indoors in Ball Gymnasium. And I had no idea where that was. And so I walked down in the basement of that. I remember the first day and ran into Vicky in her office and introduced myself. And then Sean was the GA at that time with women's field hockey and had a blast. I learned a ton from both of them. It was great. It was great. And, just experiencing that for that first semester, I was the student, and I had two people over the top of me, Sean and Vicky, that were. I was just soaking up as much as I could.
Yeah.
Practice.
There's no doubt that Vicky was incredibly intelligent and
oh my goodness, yes. And, great and, with students.
And knowledgeable.
I mean the athletic training techniques and the diagnosing and other stuff that I learned from her and from Sean during that first semester was huge.
Yeah. It's
very appreciative.
I think that's the thing is that's
it's, and people gave me warnings. There's like, hey, be careful when you go over there to Ball Gym and other stuff like that. But, if you just keep your nose down and you work hard and you show up on time and you do your best that you possibly can, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to learn a bunch. And that's what I did. I tried to be there as much as I could and soak up as much as I could.
Yeah, no. And I think that was the great thing about over there. It's just that I think there was still some control when they had separate athletic departments, there was still some headbutting and control issues
that were, and I agree.
kind of fostering over there that led to the situation of just it wasn't going to fix itself.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was bigger than the athletic training department.
Right.
I think it was the athletic department, men's and women's.
Yeah, and it just, even back then, it was, things were, I get why that was going on, but it was later than it should have been. Everybody else was kind of merging athletic departments. The kind of the 70s model of separate departments was not happening anymore, and it just took a little while for Ball State to catch up to that.
Yep.
it had some unintentional consequences with that. So
After that fall hockey experience, which was great, it was indoors, but I got to go out and I did spring football with all the guys out there with Rex and Tony and Neil and everybody, all the, you know, there's like five or six students or whatever it was. And we learned a ton that spring football and got my mouth watering for football and other things. And it was a blast doing football because of, you know, just all the hijinks that happen in the pre-practice athletic training room and taping and pre-practice. And then once they leave and the shenanigans that happen after the athletes left and went to meetings and other stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We, the whole Spinals, slung of popcorn, Mountain Dew, Retson. I need some Retson.
I remember all that stuff. And 7-Eleven, you know, just funding all that, you know, or just sending someone over to 7-Eleven to go get some popcorn. And that's one of the things that, you know, for semesters and semesters afterwards, I was always known. And Tony got a chuckle out of every time he'd see me, he'd remind me that I always dropped popcorn when I was eating it. And every time somebody would drop popcorn, then they start saying, "Luby, you just did it, Luby. You just, you know," and everything.
That's where it came from.
Two infamous things. Yeah. Two infamous things at Ball State besides my other stuff.
So one of the things that Miller brought up in the podcast is that you're working men's volleyball when he was.
Yeah. So men's volleyball was my last rotation.
Yeah. There's always great stories about if you get to work men's volleyball with the great Don Shondell.
Oh my goodness.
I think we could have a whole podcast with all the guys that work men's volleyball about our interactions with Don and stories that happened and stuff. Yeah. You were with that team when they were really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great year. It wasn't the year that they went to the Final Four or the year that we hosted the Final Four, but I had gone to some volleyball matches when I was, you know, still undecided, didn't know what I want to do, because Ball State men's volleyball was a huge thing on campus.
Right.
And they'd bring in teams like USC and UCLA and Pepperdine and Penn State and all these, you know, big schools, I thought. And I didn't realize we're competing with all of them. We're beating them all.
Right.
You know, at Ball, little old Ball State in Muncie, Indiana, again, it's like athletic training. I didn't know what it was. And then, you know, I discover it at Ball State. And then I go to Ball State and I discover men's volleyball. Didn't know what that was either. You know, the only time I'd seen that was on the Olympics.
Right.
And so, I was fortunate enough that I got to work with men's volleyball and all the great things about that, you know, spending time with Mike Miller during practice and learning as much. And that kind of happened my last year there because the big thing was you get football or basketball. Those are the two big ones that everybody wanted. They wanted to travel with football. They wanted to spend the semester. You see so many cool injuries and all the rehab and all the different types of injuries. And you get to travel and do all that. Or same thing with basketball. And so I thought going into my last year there that I was going to get football. And then in the spring, they came out with our assignments and I got men's volleyball. And I went into Rex's office there. And I'm like, "Rex, what's the deal? What's going on? I mean, how come I didn't get football? I was hoping to get football." He's like, "Luby, here's the deal." He goes, "Men's volleyball starts in the fall. It's all year long. And I'm at football in the fall, all first semester. So I need somebody I can trust at men's volleyball."
Right.
And so I was like, "Whoa, that's huge."
It is.
That he felt he could trust me as a student, as an undergrad, non-certified, that he would trust me to cover the men's volleyball team. And so that first semester, I covered it, and we practiced, you know, 5 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it was,
right,
you know, in the university gymnasium. And I was there every practice by myself. No
Yeah.
GA, no Rex,
Yeah.
no other student. It was Don Chandel, Joel Walton, all the volleyball boys, and myself.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I was considered part of that team.
Yeah.
That was cool. I was
Yeah.
part of the team, you know. And they came to me and they asked me questions and they looked to me when they had injuries and everything. And I could always go back and bounce them off.
Did Don know your name?
I don't think he did for the first month and a half, maybe. He was just like, "Hey, you, hey, you,
you,
short little blonde kid, come here."
you trainers.
Yeah, you trainer, you know. And so, but I got to know the assistant coaches and the players,
right?
And that was cool. And I was a little bit more mature because, again, it took me 2.5 years to find athletic training. So
Right.
I was 21 by the time I got into there, and so I was kind of more adultish, I would say.
Yeah. And the cool thing about that was Rex trusted you to take care of that in the fall. But then in the spring, you know, or in the winter, when their season was kind of really in the meat of stuff, then Rex usually came over and helped out with that. But he wasn't there all the time.
No, he wasn't there all the time. And the cool thing was, I mean, they put another student there, Mike Miller. He was just observing, getting into the program like I did when I got into baseball. And Mike and I, you know, we covered practices and learned how, you know, learned how to tape and learned how to do this and all that other stuff for, you know, these big giant 6'5", 6'8", you know, men, you know, that were men's volleyball. We're big kids, big adults, I should say. But I mean, they were large individuals, and with all the finger injuries and shoulder injuries and knees and ankles and all the stuff like that, we were getting a crash course of covering that stuff. And they still didn't have a GA.
Yeah.
And so when we traveled, I had to travel with them because Rex wasn't traveling.
Yeah.
And so Rex had to stay home based. And so I went all over the place with men's volleyball.
Yeah. Did they, were they still doing that San Diego trip back then? Like the ASICS Grand Prix in San Diego?
We didn't go to San Diego. I remember for spring break, we went to LA.
Yeah.
And we played Pepperdine and Loyola and UC Irvine.
Yeah.
And we played three matches while we were in California. We got to go watch USC and UCLA play each other in Pauley Pavilion. We got to go play some beach volleyball on the beach at Huntington. And then on the way back, we stopped at BYU and played in a four-team tournament with IPFW and BYU and us and some other team.
And again, that's when that rivalry with IPFW was massive.
Huge.
Massive.
Yeah, just huge. And, you know, had some great trips with the men's volleyball because, again, I'm an undergrad, but, you know, Rex trusted me. We went to Wisconsin a couple of times. We went to Penn State, drove all the way out to Rutgers, New Jersey, drove up 8 hours into Canada to Guelph, Ontario.
Oh, yes. You were on the Guelph trip.
The Guelph trip. That happened in the fall before season actually started.
You
but
were,
that was,
is that the year that they, you were in Vans and IPFW was in the same tournament and
probably
there was some
it was like -25 degrees.
Yeah, but there wasn't. Was that the trip where they our guys they went past the IPFW van and our guys decided to show a full moon? Was that it, or was that
possibly that could have happened? that could have happened in Utah too, because I remember a story in Utah where PFW was there, IPFW was there. We were there staying in the same hotel, motel, two or three story with a balcony and everything like that. And there were some shenanigans that happened that night between after the games and matches and other things like that. Because the volleyball team definitely knew how to have a good time.
Oh, absolutely.
Just like the swimmers and other teams.
Yeah. There was definitely a if you wanted to go have a good time, that's who you hung out with.
The volleyball house, the baseball house,
yeah,
the swimming house. You know, you knew the different locations that things were going to be hopping. And with volleyball, that was also the year that, unfortunately, we got knocked out of the tournament by Loy Ball at our place in Worthen Arena.
Yeah.
And the winner of that tournament went to Hawaii for the Final Four. Almost, I was that close to going to Hawaii.
Yeah. That's kind of the way that was the way it was in 90 when I was working men's volleyball, and we got we had them up 12-7, 12-8 in the rally in the fifth game in a rally game, and and we just fell apart, and they ended up winning, and I thought for sure, because that was the deal. Rex had gone to San Diego. I think Dwayne had gone to another Dwayne Gove, who was working it with me, had gone someplace else, and I was supposed to go to Hawaii, and it didn't happen. And it took another 25 years before I got to go to Hawaii, but I got to go on somebody else's time. So
that's awesome. That's what that's my wife and I's goal. We want to go there. We wanted to go there on our 25th, but COVID happened and everything like that.
Oh, so yeah.
I think we're going to push it back to 30 and try to go there for our 30th anniversary.
Definitely a great place to go. Got to take a lot of money with you. A little expensive over there.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But so you that was your senior year. So
that was my last year at Ball State, which is actually my sixth year because of finding athletic training a little bit later.
Yeah. But
other reasons too, because of education.
Yeah.
Because I added a second major. I graduated with two degrees from Ball State.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, if you're gonna do it, if you're gonna spend 6 years there, you might as well, you know, get two degrees. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
So
you had pretty much in that time made up your mind that, all right, I'm not going to go to grad school. I'm not going to go the route that some of these other guys have gone and stuff.
Typically, yeah.
Yeah. And so what kind of – and you knew you probably wanted to go back home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what kind of process was that once you were done? You were looking for jobs? Did you have something set up? Did
no, that was all a God thing too, because you know, I feel he definitely led me to Ball State, but he also led me to athletic training. And then while I was in athletic training, it was probably my fourth year there, and I was well into the athletic training program. My girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she recognized, and I recognized through her prodding me a little bit. She's like, you know what? You coach baseball during the summers. That's what I did. My summer job was between semesters. I would come home during the summer and I would work my butt off. I would coach baseball at an instructional league for 8 weeks. We coach from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day, baseball, different levels, all the way from 7-year-olds to 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
And so coach them. And then at night I would go and I would unload trucks at the grocery store and stock shelves at the grocery store. And so I had a blast working with kids, and my buddy who had graduated with, still good friends with, he was coaching football at Southside where I graduated.
Yeah.
And he was an assistant coach there. And he's like, hey, you're doing sports medicine. You're doing athletic training in college. We would love to have you come and help us out during two-a-days, first couple weeks of August before you go back to college, and just hang around during two-a-days and help us out with injuries and stuff like that. And so I started doing that before I would go back for the fall. And I had a blast doing that, learning about football, because that kind of got me. I couldn't do football other than that spring football experience at Ball State, but I got some high school football experience doing that with athletic training. And I got to meet, by that time they had hired, not really hired, but they had a physical therapist that owned a PT clinic, and he was also a PT ATC. And so he would come over a couple days a week and check on the football players. And so I got to hang around him and learn more about that type of athletic training as well.
Right.
And then, you know, by that time my wife had graduated and she started at Ball State. And so she's like, hey, you know, you thought you were going to do baseball with athletic training. What about education? Cause they're starting to put athletic trainers in high schools.
Right.
And I didn't know anything about that because, you know, we didn't have them when I was there.
Right.
So I'm like, huh, that's interesting. And so I went and I talked with one of the counselors, and I might've talked to Rex and Tony about that and stuff. And they're like, hey, yeah, that could be an opportunity for you because we need athletic trainers at high schools. And I didn't want to do the graduate athletic training, the GA thing.
Right.
I mean, I didn't make a lot of money and I didn't have a lot of money. So I wasn't looking to go spend another 2 years somewhere as a grad student. And so I picked up education as a second major because I picked up health education because that was the easiest one to blend with all of the athletic training classes and the kinesiology and the exercise physiology and, you know, all the classes that I had taken as athletic training major,
right.
It was easiest to blend with health education. So really for about the last year and a half, while I was working with teams and volleyball and I think it was swimming the year before that, I was basically taking education classes. And then I had to do my student teaching to become a teacher. And so I set up my student teaching through the School of Education. And by that time, my parents had moved to the north part of town. I didn't live on the south side of town anymore. And so my parents were like, well, you can do it at Snyder High School or Northrop High School, or there's this little school out here that's not far. It's about 5 miles away from us. It's called Carroll High School. And yeah. I didn't know what it was. And I was clueless because Carroll was a small little country farm school that nobody played. We didn't play them in any sports because I was at Fort Wayne Community Schools, Southside. We played all the Fort Wayne schools and in the surrounding big area schools. And so Carroll is a small little school and I didn't know anything about it, but I'm like, okay, I'll try it. And then Ball State set it up and they're like, yep, you're going to be at Carroll High School. Here's your supervising teacher. You need, when you get done with spring classes, you need to go meet your teacher that you're going to student teach with. And that's going to be your last semester. So I graduated after that in the fall of 93 with education major and athletic training major.
Yeah. So you didn't, obviously Carroll didn't have an athletic trainer.
No. Back then. Well, interestingly, they did have, when I went there and I did meet my supervising teacher, and I told her I'm a double major, athletic training, and she was an EMT also, a health teacher and an EMT.
Yeah.
And and so she worked for a fire department. She knew what athletic trainers were, surprisingly.
Yeah.
And so she said, oh, you're an athletic training major. You need to go meet Ed Fox. He's our head football coach, head wrestling coach, and you need to meet Dean Gorsuch. He's our athletic director, because I told him while I'm doing my fall student teaching, I'll volunteer for you as an athletic trainer.
Yeah.
And I'll help cover things. And they were like, money, take him. Awesome. And so as soon as I met the head football coach, and he's like, all right, we start 2-a-days, 1st of August. Here's a key. I'll see you there. And so I went and coached baseball for that summer. And the athletic director was an old Ball State guy. He had graduated from Ball State. So he kind of took a liking to me that way.
Yeah.
He graduated from Ball State. And I started that August. And I would student teach all day, 6 classes. And then I would cover practice, football, volleyball, soccer, cross country, everything. And I was just, they threw me to the wolves, high school athletic training wise.
Yeah.
And so the only thing I had is I had my experience from Ball State for 2.5 years doing that.
Right.
Which definitely helped, but I had to learn how to be an athletic trainer on my own, again, in a high school type setting. They had an athletic trainer from ReadyMed. And ReadyMed, they would show up 1 practice a week and 1 game per week.
Yeah.
During the fall. So they'd show up for the football game on Friday night.
Friday nights, yeah.
And maybe like a Tuesday practice or something like that. But I was with them 5-6 days a week during that fall, because you know how busy fall is with high school.
Yeah.
And I was with them. I was, you know, in bed with them and doing all the things, hanging with the coaches, you know, hanging with the athletes. I'd see the athletes during the school day, teaching them and student teaching them and other things like that. And that at the end of that football season, I think it was the end of October, beginning of November, that ReadyMed athletic trainer, she came to me and she said, hey, things are switching up here. And I think you're going to get on board because they're talking about you and they're going to offer a full-time athletic training position. Fort Wayne Orthopedics at that time, there are 2 orthopedic places here in town, firms here in town with groups, and they were getting into the high school athletic training business, sports medicine. And so they came out to Carroll High School and they said, we want to provide you a full-time athletic trainer that's there every day for practice and games and all home practices, and we'll pay for it, Fort Wayne Orthopedics.
Right.
And the head coach and the athletic director and the superintendent at that time, Dr. Yeager, they said, perfect, we've got a guy for you. So they're like, oh, really? And so I went down there and I had about a 10-minute interview on the at Fort Wayne Orthopedics, and
right.
Peter Panessa, who was the head physical therapist at that time, was starting up the sports medicine program with the orthopedic doctors. He said, we want to hire you. And so first part of December, I had a job and I hadn't even graduated yet. And that was cool because I was sitting in the graduation at Worthen Arena in the middle of December, sitting next to some exercise science buddies and some other students that I'd run into and other stuff. And they're like, well, what are you doing? Where are you going to school? What's next? And I'm like, well, I already got a job offered to me and I haven't even graduated yet. And I didn't fill out an application.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a resume.
Yeah.
And so I had one in my back pocket already.
No, that was, and that's a credit to you. Cause I mean, obviously you came in and just, it was really an on the job interview. I mean,
yeah,
they knew who they wanted and they were going to leverage that against the fact that, yeah, that's great. You want to come in and give us a full-time athletic trainer. That's great. But this is the guy that we want. And if you want our business, this is basically who you're going to hire. And so,
and that's how I ended up. And the cool thing was, they said, you're going to be here every day. And so since you're here every day and you don't have a teaching job, because I graduated, and then that spring, January was my hire date with Fort Wayne Orthopedics. The school superintendent told me, you're going to sub every day in our school district.
Yeah.
We're going to put you on the sub list and we're going to put you first on the sub list. So you're the first person they call when a teacher is sick, because we want to keep you around here. And so they would, you know, they would call me at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:45 in the morning. Somebody would call in sick and I'd get a phone call. Hey, go sub at this building or go sub at this middle school or at this elementary. And that was an eye opener too, dealing with elementary kids. But, you know, luckily I'd had some experience with 7-year-olds, you know, coaching baseball and stuff.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I'm doing part-time right now. This is, I guess, public announcement, but since I have my mornings free now, and they desperately needed subs at my kid's school, which is
every
3 miles
district.
Away. Yeah. So I got my sub permit and I'm a part-time sub there, which there isn't too many part-time jobs, but last Friday I was the pre-K aide for 4 and 5 year olds at the elementary school. I was, my eyes were wide open to that. I said, thank goodness for preschool teachers, because they have a ton of patience. At one point in time, every toy that was in that room was probably on the floor. I felt like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop.
They
were all over the place. And I asked the teacher, I go, what's going on? She goes, Friday the 13th, full moon, male preschool aides that they never get to see. Cause I got asked by every one of them if I was a police officer. Are you a police officer? No, I'm not a police officer. I'm just here to help out. But that's what I'm doing right now, because I have some time
that's
to
awesome.
Do that. And I wasn't sure if like, could I handle the preschool? Now, I'll admit, like, when I got home for lunch, you know, after I was done, I took a nap for about 20 minutes because I was
tire you
smoked.
Out.
I was smoked.
They will tire you out.
But it was so much fun. And I think that's the thing about it, is that you have a different, it's okay to have different experiences that give you different perspectives outside of what you normally work in. To do those things. It was a blast. It really was.
Yeah.
So I get that, you know, they're telling you where to go and stuff. And you're like, what am I going to do? What what's going to happen this time? But
I subbed that whole spring semester, which was awesome, because I got to see lots of different people, lots of different administrators, lots of different classrooms, other things, like, which was valuable to me going into education. And then lo and behold, near the end of that spring semester, the superintendent came up to me and told me, he goes, hey, go across the parking lot over here and go meet our middle school principal, because he's got a job for you. And so that spring semester, they offered me half-time teaching health at the middle school, 3 periods a day. And again, definitely God-led, because he provided the athletic training job for me through Fort Wayne Orthopedics, and then they provided a half-time teaching job at the middle school, which then the next year after that turned into a full-time job. And I spent 9 years at the middle school teaching those middle school kids. And I'd always told myself, there's no way I'll teach middle school. Those kids are wild. You know,
yeah.
Other things I got, but God put his hand on my shoulder. He goes, nope, you're going to be here for 9 years.
Yeah.
And you're going to love it. And you're going to have a great influence on people.
Right.
As a health teacher and other things like that. And then I'd walk across the parking lot and be the athletic trainer after school. So that's
interesting because, I mean, at the time you were Fort Wayne, I mean, as your Fort Wayne Orthopedics employee as an athletic trainer, were you covering some middle school events or was it just primarily high school?
Yeah, we were on the same campus. The high school and the middle school were only separated by a parking lot. And so we shared practice fields and they played on our varsity football field. And so when varsity football had a practice going on, but there was a middle school football game, I'd just go hang out at the middle school football game just in case, because you know that the game is more likely going to have something than a practice is going to have.
Yeah. So really you were connected to those kids for about what, 7 years?
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing them.
Yeah. And the families, not just that kid. Yeah. But you're learning little brothers, little sisters. You're getting to know parents. Parents are getting to know you.
Yeah,
you're getting to know the middle school coaches, high school coaches.
I'm experiencing that right now. Yeah. I mean,
awesome.
I got text yesterday, again from a parent that they're the younger brother. You know.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, can you look? You took care of my daughter. Can you take a look at him too? Yeah, that's fine.
Oh yeah.
You know. Yeah. And I think that's the thing where I think is, I don't know of any, like at the college setting, well, I guess nowadays
they might call you any hour of the day.
Yeah. But nowadays you might know those kids for 7 years, the way things have been going, but for the most part, it's 4 years and they're out and you form relationships that are great. But you know, if you're at the situation you're talking about where, and in, even in your unique case where you're teaching and you're the athlete trainer, but you're knowing, you're getting to know those middle school kids as a teacher, and then you're going back over and you're at the high school as an athlete trainer, and you're covering those events, but you're knowing those kids as they're coming in as middle schoolers. Yep. And then
it's huge. It's you're building those relationships, but you're getting to know the ins and outs of those kids, what they think, how they act, what they, you know, what their pain tolerance is, all that other stuff. And you're getting to know them for at least 7 years and stuff like that, if they make it all the way through varsity sports.
Right.
You know, and you get to see the kids. The cool thing about high school or secondary school sports is you're dealing with kids that love sports, but not all of them are athletes.
Right.
And they're not all Division I, best in their class, best in their area, best in the state. They're getting full ride scholarships. You're dealing with the kids that are learning how to shoot baskets as much as you are dealing with the kids that can dunk it and can shoot three pointers and dribble around your head and all the other things like that. You're getting to see all the different levels of athletics from, you know, there's nothing more exciting than a freshman girls basketball game where they turn it over 50 times. And then the next hour you get to go watch the varsity.
Yeah.
And they can make passes and handle the ball and play defense and other stuff.
And you get
see it in every level.
Yeah, and you get to see that progression. I mean, I think that's the thing that
you get to see the kids grow up.
Yeah, and I think that's what's right now. I'm just kind of, I'm not even a year, and I'm watching these kids going, are they ever, you know, some of these kids, are they ever going to be halfway decent? And knowing that down the line they're going to pick up some skills and they're going to be like I said, maybe not college material, but they're going to be good and they'll grow from that. And I think that's the thing where
that's the beauty of high school sports.
Yeah.
Is they're going to grow from just doing the sports and the activities. They're going to grow as a person because of that activity. That's why I like the IHSA, because they're really pushing that with, you know, you can get lots out of just being on a team and learn lots of learning experiences in life from doing any type of high school sports. And we've got 20 different sports that we cover. You know, actually, we've added a couple more this year with girls wrestling and boys volleyball and other things.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you start out at Carroll High School when it's like country school.
Yep.
You know, for the most part. Now, 28 years later, is that right?
This is my 30th year. I started in the fall of 93.
Yeah.
And
yeah, okay.
I added it up. This is my, we just finished our 30th football season, and now we're in 30th basketball season. And so we, like you said, we started as a small country school. We had probably 900, little over 900 students when I started here.
Yeah.
All four grades, 9 through 12. Now we're about 2,500.
That is.
We've almost tripled in size since I've been here. And we've
Yeah.
gone through growth spurts, and we're building, we built a second middle school, and we added four more elementaries, and we're building another elementary, and we're going to add our third middle school here in a couple of years. And we've got to add on to the high school again, because we built it for 2,700 12 years ago, but we're right now we're at 25, and we're expected to keep growing. They just keep putting neighborhoods and neighborhoods and neighborhoods out here.
Right.
So we're going to add on to the high school a third time since I've been here.
So, with that being said, I mean, what did you start out with, like an athletic training room, comparative to what you have now?
Yeah. Fortunately, now we've got a full room in the field house with seven or eight tables and storage and an office and a full hydro area and good access doors on two different sides of the wall, two different sides of the room. Whereas when I started, basically had a 15 by 15 foot room with two taping tables, or one taping table and a treatment table, and a whirlpool and some cabinets.
Yeah.
And maybe a four pack Hydroc and an ice machine. And the ice machine is still here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we still have that as a satellite athletic training room back in the old part of the school near the old main gym. And so the last couple of years, we've grown tremendously staff-wise also. It's not just me. It was myself for about 19 years, all by myself, covering everything and both middle schools. And now we have three full-time athletic trainers, myself and two others, and they both work for we've changed also in the last 30 years. Now I work for orthopedic OPS, Orthopedic Performance Sports, or not orthopedic, Optimum, sorry. Optimum Performance Sports. We've changed names three times.
Maybe Zach won't listen to this. We'll be okay.
Yeah. We've changed three times. We were Fort Wayne Orthopedics, and then we got bought out by Lutheran Hospital and became the Orthopedic Hospital, TOH. And now it's OPS was designed about 5 or 6 years ago to be the sports medicine provider for Carroll High School, as well as a bunch of other high schools and colleges and pros and other stuff here in Fort Wayne. So I work for OPS, which is awesome for the school because they're providing two other athletic trainers out here. And Carroll High School doesn't have to pay me anything as an athletic trainer. There's no stipend. Right. I don't get paid by Northwest Allen County Schools as an athletic trainer. I get paid by OPS. I'm a hospital employee when it comes to that.
And just for, if there's an audience out here of let's say, entry-level master's students that are trying to find their way in professions of athletic training, how does that work with your benefit package? Like, from, is there a bit, is, are you considered full-time with OPS?
Yes.
And the school?
I am. Yes. So, and that's what I've really, for the last few years, I've been trying to push that a little bit, is for more high school athletic trainers at the secondary level, but also there are some perks because you're going to be, if you get hired by a school district as a teacher, like I am, but you also are considered a full-time employee by OPS or any other sports medicine provider, hospital situation or orthopedic group or whoever. And so I get benefits if I want from them. So I don't take my health insurance benefits from the hospital, but I do get retirement benefits and 401k and that type of stuff through the hospital, which is nice.
Yeah. On top of what you're getting as a teacher.
Right. And then as a full-time teacher, I'm getting, you know, other benefits for teacher retirement fund and other things.
Yeah.
I've got that rule of 85 says if number of years experience plus your age, you can retire with full teacher benefits or teacher, whatever. And I'm 1 year away from that. So, I'm going to keep teaching. I still love it. I used to tell people the first 5 years that I was working that I'm an athletic trainer who teaches.
Yeah.
for the last 25 years, probably. And my wife really prompted me on this. She goes, "You always tell people you're an athletic trainer. You don't tell them you're a teacher." I'm like, "Well, I thought that was the more interesting thing." But really, for the last 25 years, I'm a teacher who's also an athletic trainer.
Yeah.
I love the teaching inside. I wouldn't give up either one or the other. And that was because I fell in love with it. And yeah. I love dealing with those kids and making relationships. I'm teaching with tons and tons of kids that have gone to school here. And yeah. You know, we're very good friends, best friends with a lot of those families that have had kids here and that I've grown up. They've grown up here and they've become professionals here and teachers and coaches and administrators and other things like that. I've ingrained myself in this community and become part of it. So
talk to me a little bit about that. You actually have a sports medicine class at the high school level in a partnership with Ball State counts as a 196 class. Is that still the case?
It used to. And so
I guess it doesn't matter now because.
Right. Because it's master's entry level program now. They did away with the dual credit for the sports medicine class. I still teach a medical terminology class for dual credit.
Okay.
And so for the last few, I've been at the high school for the last 21 years and I taught everything from health to PE. And I still teach I teach five different classes a day. I have five preps. Okay. And so I teach first and second period intro to health careers, which the second semester turns into medical terminology.
Okay.
And they can get dual credit from Ball State. I made that connection a few years ago with them. They can get medical terminology credit by taking that class here at Ball State or taking it here at Carroll High School. And they get 3 credit hours of nursing 101, which is medical terminology. And they make all the health majors, pre-med majors, nursing majors, athletic training majors, exercise science, I think, they make them all take that nursing 101 class because it's medical terminology.
Right.
So they offer dual credit for that. And then I have a PE, elective PE class that I teach. This semester it's racket sports. So we do badminton, pickleball, tennis, ping pong,
right,
all kinds of things. And then I have a sophomore health class that I still teach. Okay. I used to teach nothing but sophomore health, but I've added more electives as I've been here. And then I have a sports medicine senior internship class, as well as a health careers senior internship class for students who want to become nurses, doctors, pharmacists, PTs, everything else like that. But the sports medicine class happened about 15 years ago because of one of our administrators was on the cutting edge. And he said, "Hey, this career technical education stuff, vocational stuff, I think you would fit into." And so he's like, "What about a sports medicine class?" And I'd always had students, managers, whoever, that wanted to learn a little bit and would hang around me and learn how to handle basic injuries and other stuff. We call them athletic training students or student, whatever, athletic trainers until the NATA says we can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Because that's hurting everybody, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bringing more kids into the fold is hurting us. So we met with Tony when TC was still there.
Yeah.
And we went down and talked to him. He goes, "Yeah, Luby, you'd be great at this. You should teach that class." And so we started teaching it, and Dr. Widener agreed and said, "Yeah, we'll give you dual credit for PEP 196.
Right.
Now, it's an entry level dual credit class. And so I had those kids for 2 periods, and I just taught them as much as I could teach them, all the different stuff from textbook and from experiences and making them shadow me at practices and games and other stuff like that. And then it's changed to another course. It was PAT 240 or 260 or whatever.
Right.
They changed the different names to it. And then when it went to the master's level entry program, they said, "Well, we can't offer it for dual credit, but I'm still teaching it." And I still teach it. And it's still part of our career technical education here at Carroll High School. And I still have kids that have taken it, this year. And I've taught it for the last 15 years, which is awesome. It's great.
I've kind of been charged a little bit with our principal and our superintendent that want to try to do something like that. And I told him, I said, "Let me just get settled in here a little bit and figure out how to I got to figure out some other stuff before I start doing that.
Yeah, it'll grow into it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing about it is that I would be excited about that, and because that's kind of in my wheelhouse too, you know, with all the high school athletic training workshops that we used to do, and and I still have all that stuff, paper and on computer and stuff like that, so it probably would just slide into a lot of that stuff anyway, those kids still need to be introduced to what this profession is, whether they have to be there. They have to go to school for, they can go to school for 3.5 years now. Yeah. I mean, especially if you got a kid that takes some dual credit, you know, classes like an English class or a math class or something like that, they honestly could probably slide into that entry-level master's program potentially their second semester of their junior year.
Yeah. Which is cool. I'm glad Ball State does that 3-2 program.
Yeah.
That's a good marketing way to do it.
Right.
But I think athletic trainers like yourself are naturally good teachers. I mean, we have to, there's education built into athletic training because you're teaching the athlete what's going on with their body, with the injury. You're talking to coaches, you're doing lots of education within it. And I would love to see, and then there's a few athletic trainers that do the secondary route like I do. I would love to go meet with Ball State and their education program or, you know, the athletic training program and say, hey, I would love to go talk with teachers and encourage them. If they're athletic motivated, if they've been former athletes and they think that they want to coach or they want to, you know, do something like that, it doesn't have to be a PE teacher or a health teacher, but to think about athletic training as that master's program, because they can do, an undergrad in education. We need teachers, but we also need athletic trainers. And that's a great way to build up their salary because you're getting two paychecks, not just one.
Right.
And you're getting, if you're working in the school system, they're paying you as a teacher, but you're also getting an athletic training salary,
right,
sports medicine, you know, working. And so that's a great way to say, hey, this is a way that you can get more out of it, but you're also going to probably grow as well doing it too. I wouldn't give up either one for the other. I think teaching makes me a better athletic trainer because I get to know those kids for 7 to 4 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think athletic training makes me a better teacher in the classroom too, because the kids get to know me and I get to know them outside of the classroom. And, you know, that's a huge win-win for teachers and to get to know your students' personalities.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. We actually have a lot of kids that do vocational classes in Newcastle. So they're out of school a period of time. And I think that's the thing where I could say, hey, I can do this potentially in-house with some of this stuff. They could still go to Newcastle and do stuff there. But if they're interested in doing something like this, then and I know that the academia world, when I say vocational, their skin kind of crawls a little bit because we're not a vocation, you know. I get that.
Right,
I understand.
Right.
But
you're getting people into the job force.
Right.
And the good things, like you said, you mentioned earlier, nowadays people know what athletic training is in sports, in high schools,
right,
and stuff like that. It's not like you go up to a parent nowadays and you say, hey, I'm the athletic trainer, and they think that you're a yoga trainer or a horse trainer or other things like that. They know what athletic trainers are in high schools. And it is a vocation. And it's a job force that, you know, I've got a student that's coming to interview me tomorrow morning before school because she's writing an English paper and she wants to know what are the fields of athletic training and what it's all about. So that's going to be her English paper.
Yeah.
So there's kids that are interested in it.
I wonder, in our efforts to really establish ourselves as a medical profession, the pendulum kind of swung a little bit. We're still very much a medical profession.
Oh, and we always have been.
Yeah. But it swung so far over to that area that they don't see the opportunities of like what you've talked about is that you can be a teacher and you can be an athletic trainer. You don't have to be one or the other, and you could do both, and you just have to figure out a way that would allow you to do both. And maybe that's the idea that was sold upon the entry-level master's program, is that you can go get your education degree.
I hope so.
And your undergrad, and then you can go on and do your entry-level master's. But I see what you're saying. There needs to be a pathway that if you're already established, let's say, as a teacher, and you want to go do your athletic training, you want to be an athletic trainer too, because you are interested in sports. There has to be a way that can facilitate that without, I mean, there has to be a way that you can still obtain clinical experience and your classwork and your training and stuff. And maybe, you know, maybe there, I don't know, there's a couple of those that are out there. I don't know if they're entry-level masters for athletic training, that most of it's online, which I'm not a proponent of if you're trying to get clinical experience online and stuff, but yeah.
I think there's a path, there's a way that you could do it with a 3-2 program, or even if the original 4-2, that, you know, you're still young enough that you're going to get your master's degree. If they're forcing you to get your master's degree to be an athletic trainer, you can still get it enough. You're still at a good time in your life when you're in your young 20s that you can get your education degree, do your student teaching while you're doing athletic training and that type of stuff, and then worry about getting a teaching job after you get your master's. There's always going to be teaching jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a good thing about education, is we need teachers, but we also need athletic trainers also. Yeah. So if they can marry those two together somehow, I think it would help us out, because, you know, people are going to start retiring, and, you know, like they are, they're, you know, athletic training has, I've always thought, you know, I was talking with Ralph, Willard down at Fisher's this week. Yeah. We had a basketball game down there.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, athletic training is always one of those careers that you're either a lifer or you're moving on looking for something else. It's a stepping stone career where you want to be an athletic trainer just so that you can get into physical therapy school, or you're an athletic trainer so you can get into med school, or you can get into PA school, or you can get into pharmaceutical sales or some other medical sales. Athletic trainers, we've known hundreds of them that started out as athletic trainers, and then they move on to something else.
Right.
You know, or there's lifers like us.
Yeah.
I've been in it for a while, and we find our niche, and whether that's at the college level or the professional level or the clinical level or the high school or the military, or now they have tactical and all these other things, I guess.
Right.
There are niches out there for athletic trainers. But if you can make yourself more marketable, and that's what I'm thankful that I did that when I did, because I just fell in the perfect time zone, or perfect time when I had 2 degrees and I had a school district and an orthopedic group looking for me and looking for somebody like me. And it worked out perfect.
Yeah. So. No, that's, I think that's a lot of it too, is timing and placement and people that are ready to do something. And that's I think that's important, that when you're out there looking for that, if you can find that, like you said, you find that niche, that that group is looking for somebody like what you have to offer, then it's a great fit, and you end up somewhere for 30 years.
And high school sports are awesome, because what we said earlier, you're going to see all different levels. You're going to have the good seasons, you're going to have the bad seasons, you're going to have the 2-10 seasons, you're going to have the 12-2 seasons, you're going to have, you know, it's cyclical and it comes around, but when you see it, and, you know, just like, you know, with the football season that we had this last year, if you would have told me that little tiny Carroll High School, 900 students where I started, is going to go to the state football game, I would have said you're insane.
Yeah.
But we were fortunate enough that we've grown enough and we've gotten some really good athletes and good coaches, and we had a lot of good breaks during the season this year. With the schedule and other stuff, that we just had a magical year and we made it to the state and never thought that would happen.
No, there is some magic involved with that. And then I think again, it's one of those things where, you want to make sure you enjoy the ride a little bit while you get that opportunity. And this is my question. I was going to, hopefully we don't go too far off the rails with this, because we've got about 10 minutes with this. But that was one of the things where I wanted to ask you, you had a great football season, but you had a tough beginning. And
we did.
How did you, you know, when I was at the college level, we would say, hey, we got all these mental health services and we've got this and we got that. How did you navigate that at the high school level?
Well, the situation that happened is we lost our starting quarterback really, really quickly to a serious cancer that attacked him very rapidly. And it just hit us all like a brick wall. Hit the coaches, hit the athletes, hit the family, hit all of us. I had Owen in class both semesters last year, his junior year. I had him in my health careers classes. He was going to be an outstanding senior quarterback for us. And then I get a call, graduation, the day of graduation, from my boss at OPS, Dr. Russell. And he said, hey, what's going on with Owen? And I was clueless. I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Because it was just so sudden that they rushed him to the hospital. The family thought he was sick for weeks, just with mono or the flu or other things.
Right. Which would not be unexpected. Yeah.
Exactly. And so they diagnosed him with a severe, fast-acting leukemia that attacked his body and his immune system. And he went downhill really quick. They took him to the emergency room. They flew him to Riley Hospital. And 2 days later, unfortunately, he passed away. And it hit the coaching staff and the students and all of us like a ton of bricks, not just a brick wall, but they fell on us, crushed us. And so the summer was rough. The team really bonded and grew together and embraced the grind and embraced Owen. And he was definitely still with us throughout all of that. And he was such a strong, positive mentor for a lot of people on the team, athletically as well as spiritually. He was a strong Christian kid.
Yeah.
And so that helped. But I think it showed God to a lot of people that normally wouldn't see God.
Yeah.
And it helped us go through the season. The team bonded together. They started playing well. Our defense was really tough. And the cool thing about the whole season was they grew as people, not just as athletes. Yeah. And they grew as brothers and teammates that are never going to forget this and never going to forget Owen and what he put on the program and left for the program. But more than that, after every single game, and I've never seen this before, after every single game, they met on the 50-yard line with the opposing team for a team prayer afterwards. Student-led, student-led team prayer after the game. And every school that we played also did something special for Owen, for our team, and for the family, whether it was they put stickers on the back of their helmets with his number on it, or they wore a certain color to the game in honor of him. The team that we played in state, Center Grove, has won it 3 years in a row. But they wore stickers, blue 13 stickers on the back of their helmets because they knew what we had gone through. And it was an amazing season because of Owen, but because of these kids and the impact that they had to go through together. And they grew together. And that's what allowed them to be together is because of themselves.
Life lessons that get taught.
Huge life lessons. Yeah. You know, I mean, like you said, I mean, unfortunately, sometimes as athletic trainers, we have to deal with that type of stuff with our athletes.
Right.
And I've had to before with, you know, students here at Carroll High School. We've had a number of students that have passed away either through illness or through car accidents or other tragic events and things like that. And it's not fun dealing with any of them. But you really see what it does to the community. And it can be positive too. In this case, it was a huge impact on us positively for Owen. Yeah. And he's, you know, definitely part of the team still and will always be part of the team.
Right. Yeah, it is. I think that's the thing is you're still an integral part of all that healing process, whether it's physical or emotional, mental healing.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you have been a tremendous resource in that process. And I don't think that gets recognized enough amongst athletic trainers. I mean, it's just now starting to come out a little bit, but just being that emotional and psychological resource for people to come to. And then with your experience and knowledge, you're handling some of that yourself, but you're also connected enough that you're sending that stuff out to wherever you might be at. And I think that's the thing that makes this profession special, is that it's just not the sprained knee or the sprained ankle that you're going to take care of. No. It's the whole person. And if you have a grasp on that, and our years of maturity and experience plays right into that, but that's what I guess that would be some advice I would give a young athletic trainer, is just don't be so myopic that you're just looking at just that physical aspect of that athlete, wherever you're at and whatever you're doing. Make yourself
Your level, and whether it's at Division I college programs or the professional or at the high school level, where you're dealing with kids that can't shoot and can't catch and, you know, aren't going to see the field and other stuff like that, you're still dealing with them as individuals, and you're still building relationships with that kid, even whether he's a starter or whether he's a JV or whether he's going to get cut after his freshman year. I still get to see those kids in the hallways and the classrooms, and they still come back as graduates and other stuff too. And so being a health teacher definitely helps me, you know, deal with all those three areas of the health spectrum, with physical, mental, and social health. And that's, I'm fortunate that I get to be in there. And I think it's a part of my mission, is where I found myself, and God has definitely placed me here, because my wife and I and our family, we go to a Christian missionary church, and we've gone there for 30 plus years. And we have all these friends that come in to our denomination, to our church, and then they leave and they go off to Russia, or they go to Israel, or they go to South America or Asia or other places as missionaries. And my wife and I, we definitely, after the first few years, you know, we were still young, married, maybe kids, maybe not even have kids yet. We're like, how come we're not feeling that tug to go off and be missionaries wherever, like a lot of our friends do? And then it finally, God spoke to us and said, you are missionaries, but you're a missionary at Lutheran Hospital, where my wife is a nurse.
Yeah.
And you're a missionary at Carroll High School, you know, Carroll Middle School, where you're a teacher and an athletic trainer, and you're dealing with kids and families and staff and everything else like that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We're fortunate.
Yeah. No, we're very fortunate. And that's what kind of made it exciting for me, because I have a new group that I'm connecting with, and hopefully they're seeing that a little bit too. Like I said, I'm still learning kids' names right now. It's kind of interesting. I was asking someone of the kids, like, well, I had a rash of wrestlers. It's the end of wrestling season. You can tell the JV kids are toast. They're done. They're coming in with all sorts of stuff. And finally I just had to ask one of the kids that I was rehabbing, and I'm like, all right, who was that kid that came in? What's his name? And what was this kid? So I'm still learning how to connect a little bit.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. No, that's a beautiful thing about being at a high school, is you'll get to spend a number of years or seasons. And if you're at a small school like you are, you get to see kids on multiple seasons.
Yeah.
Because you're in a small school like you're at. And that's an awesome experience, because you'll get to know them as a football player and as a wrestler and probably as a baseball or a track athlete.
Right.
Whereas the way sports have gone in high school sports, the bigger the school gets, the more athletes you get, but the more one sport athletes you get.
Yeah, the more
special. They're specializing. They're sports specialization, and they're making money off youth sports with kids big time today. But when you're at a smaller school like I used to be at, but now you're at, you're going to get to know those kids even better, because you get to see them multiple seasons, which is awesome.
I've learned to ask, like, all right, what else do you do? You know, how can let's think ahead and figure out, like, what can we do to help prepare for the next step? Because this season's going to end, and you're going to want to be able to be ready to go for that next season and stuff. Or
we see multiple injuries because those kids are playing basketball, you know, during the season, but they're also doing something else when they're not at basketball, because they're at volleyball, or we had a basketball player that took a baseball in the nose because he was taking batting practice during Christmas break, in the batting cage, broke his nose, and now he's playing basketball with a broken nose and with a mask and other stuff. And kids never sit down and just do one thing.
Right. Yeah. That's I've got a girls basketball player right now that's got some lateral epicondylitis from all her softball workouts, you know.
Yep.
And it's on her shooting arm.
Surgeries.
And the basketball coach is like, well, I need her to score. And I'm like, but the PT she's seeing for the softball stuff is saying back off and trying to find that. And that's what I told the basketball coach last night. I said, we're going to find a happy medium and we're going to try to work around that as much as we can. But you know, they're having a great girls basketball season for what they're having. And so she's an integral part of that and trying to find that balance. But it's unusual because at the college level, I never had to worry about that. They were just doing that thing and that was it. And I didn't have to worry.
They specialized already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, you're going to run into more in that in the next few seasons that you're there. You're going to see that, like you said, you're going to ask, okay, what else are you doing that might have caused this injury? Or the number of kids that come in on Monday morning that have injured themselves because they were doing something at a travel tournament, you know?
Yeah, and then, I'm learning about that too.
Oh yeah, travel sports, youth sports are all about making money off these parents and these kids, and so you'll see that.
Well, listen, it's been an hour and a half. It went by really, really fast. So,
yeah, it did.
So I want to thank you for being on the podcast, Steve, and you know, doggone, you got a great story, and I really enjoyed our time doing this. So, just stay on a little bit longer and I'll make sure things are downloading and we'll wrap this up. So we've gone off the roll with Steve Lubiusen.
Thanks, Troy. It's been an honor and I appreciate you very much. And I value your friendship and everything that we do and have done together for decades and decades now.
Decades. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Take care.
I want to thank Steve for coming on the podcast today. He had a really great story, and I know he's got more that he may want to share with us down the road, so we may have to have him back on. Just wanted to let you know again, you can follow us on Twitter at OffTheRollPod1. That is our handle on Twitter, and I'm going to try to support the podcast with some information about our guests that come on, and little things that I may find out there as well. And any feedback you want to give us, you can do it offtherollpodcast@gmail.com. That's our email account as well. And I'm delving into this to try to make this better, and I'm learning things every day. So I really appreciate your support and listening to the podcast, but any feedback is always welcome as well. So have a great day. Go out there and make it a great day. And we'll talk to you later. Thank you.